Michael Rockefeller, 23-year-old son of then-New York Governor Nelson Rockefeller, disappeared mysteriously in 1961 off the coast of New Guinea. A new novel by Samantha Gillison called The King of America explores Rockefeller's life and death. Alan Chuse has a review.
Novelist Gillison calls her main character Stephen Hess and his father Nicholas Hess, but the parallels are clear. Stephen is born to the New York governor's first wife. He has a quirky childhood, attends Harvard, where despite his lack of experience, he convinces a world-class anthropologist to take him along on an expedition to New Guinea. With a lot of help from other members of the expedition, he paddles about the various estuaries along the Torres Strait, taking photographs of and buying artifacts from the indigenous tribes, a number of them war-prone and cannibalistic. A fleet of war canoes emerged from a bend in the river, Gillison writes, paddled by men dressed for battle. Feather crowns created magnificent halos over their faces, and carved seashells hooked through their septums made them into a flock of enormous birds of prey. Her main character doesn't die at the hands of these cannibals, as the legend about Michael Rockefeller would have it, but his sojourn among these death-haunted, head-hunting Asmat tribespeople of New Guinea adds new richness to Gillison's already lyrical prose, and brings Michael Rockefeller to life in a way that no biography could achieve.
The book is The King of America by Samantha Gillison. Our reviewer, Alan Chuse, teaches writing at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. Turn the dial on your radio these days, and there's a pretty good chance you'll soon hear the choppy, thumping sounds of hip-hop. Of course, hip-hop now sells cars and clothes and a lot of other products. It's become as pervasive as rock music was 25 years ago. It's also largely ignored by an entire generation, a generation of music lovers. Writer Mikel Jolet has been trying to puzzle this out.
This is a journey into sound.
My parents are baby boomers. They are good people. And though I do blame them for a few misdeeds like the impending collapse of Social Security, airport cults, Oprah, the truth is, we're not so different. We get along. After all, I need somewhere to do my laundry and they need someone to program the clock on the VCR. We agree on most of the big picture stuff. Still, there is one thing about which we have never, ever been able to agree. Hip-hop.
Pump up the volume, pump up the volume.
I don't know what it is with baby boomers and hip-hop, but the generation that brought us Jimi Hendrix and Ken Kesey seems to have a problem with Dr. Dre and Eminem. When the subject of hip-hop comes up around my family, my mom, who attended Love-Ins, organized a sit-in at her high school and once danced on stage during Hair, suddenly sounds a lot less like Joni Mitchell and a lot more like June Cleaver. With a few notable exceptions, most people over 50 hate hip-hop. And incidentally, I don't think this is just a white boomer thing. A lot of black parents who grew up on classic soul and R&B seem to lament the form as much as white parents. When you can understand the lyrics, they're so violent, they all seem to be saying. The songs are all about drugs. There's so much foul language, they can't sing. Which is ironic, because those are the exact same things that people once said about rock and roll. Remember this?
They stone you when you're trying to go home. They'll stone you when you're there all alone. But I would not feel so all alone. Everybody must get stoned.
Okay, let's be honest. This may have been a song about being ostracized, but it's also a song about getting stoned. I mean, there's Bob Dylan, this coffeehouse beatnik with messy hair and a faded jean jacket, and this was one of his biggest hits? Was it because the tune is more catchy than Blowin' in the Wind or Tambourine Man? No, it's because people want to sing along with that part where he says, everybody must get stoned. Not because they're all junkies, but because it's playful, it's irreverent. Well, this is exactly the sort of thing that rappers do. All that talk about, yo, rolling spliffs and packing pipes and smoking a chronic. Well, sure, I mean, they're corruptors of youth. But then youth basically want to be corrupted. It's sort of the cornerstone of youth, the cornerstone of popular music.
The greed for the speed is like way beyond limits. I grab my parachute with like forks and spoons in it, and I'm falling. My heart rapid rushes, death before my eyes. Oh, why did I trust this? My reactions are repeated over and over and over. Oh, it seems like I will never be so high.
Okay, so in the late 60s, when the debate over the Vietnam War was still raging, protest songs were a way of raising awareness, a way to say, look, I don't know what world you live in, but the reality of this situation is not pretty.
He's only 31, and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years.
That's exactly what hip-hop does. All those violent tales about growing up on the street and being poor and joining gangs, it's all a way of saying, listen, there is a different America that you don't live in, where people get shot and your mom works 3 jobs and the police beat up your dad and the buildings are infested and the schools stink. And this may not be your reality or the reality you watch on nighttime television, but this is the reality where I'm from.
Some get a little and some get none. Some catch a bad one and some leave the job half done. I was one who never had and always mad. Never knew my dad. Mother the fact. Well, anyway, I did pick up. Listen, click up. See many stick up. Cause niggas had to trigger hiccups. I couldn't get a job. Nappy hair was not allowed. My mother couldn't afford us all. She had to throw me out. I walked the strip, which is a clip. Who wanna hit? They got them quick. I had to eat this money. Good as spit. I threw in braids. I wasn't paid enough. I kept them on cause I couldn't afford a hair.
Of course, not all hip-hop is about the gritty reality of the ghetto. Some of it's actually much more positive and artistic. But then some of it is just plain filthy, misogynistic, gratuitous, money-lusting. You know, every other word is F this or your mama that. It's offensive, it's immoral. Where's the message, baby boomers ask? Say what you will about Bob Dylan. The guy had morals. Well, with hip-hop, I guess the answer is, there aren't any. For the most part, these are not morality tales. But then, Jim Morrison wasn't exactly a morality tale either. Neither is Hannibal Lecter, Freddy Krueger, Tony Soprano, or Bart Simpson. People like joining the dark side, connecting to it. Maybe it makes our reality look good, while recognizing the rage, the swagger, the injustice of life that we all feel. And there's a certain thrill to indulging in fantasy of this sort, not because you don't know the difference between right and wrong, but because you do, and for now, you want to choose wrong. It's only fantasy. This is why your kids like hip-hop. Because, right or wrong, it's an attempt to make some sense of the world around them. After all, that's something they learn from their parents.
Mikel Jolet is the managing editor for the music magazine Filter.
We get together. But separate songs are better when there's feelings involved. If what they say is nothing is forever, then what makes, 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 then what makes.